Equinox greetings. Thank you for tuning in. The equinox is tomorrow, and it's a still point, a portal to the infinite now, from which past and future emerge and merge. This is Torku's story, the rebirth of the dragon dog, and ours too, as it's unfolding in our lives today, simultaneously lighting up the distant past and the near future. He was captured in 628 AD in the land of the wild yaks, when the last of the old story portals closed. There was a storm that lasted most of the year and great flooding. People were sick and hungry. Many of the animals had already fled and the crops had failed. The land that had once been abundant was scraped bare and treeless, except for a colony of poplar standing proud and isolated on the mountain slope that rose from the high plateau. The portal was there, nestled in the roots of the trees, and Torku guarded the portal, waiting patiently for the key people to show up, which is what the dragon dogs do. Story portals work in alignment with dragon energy. These are the creative powers of the earth, and our creative powers too. They work through the original humans who choose to live on their own terms and in alignment with nature. Dragon dogs might guard other portals too, but I don't really know about that, as I don't have any experience of other portals at the moment. Dragon dogs guard the story portals physically and also energetically by ensuring that the portal only opens to those in resonance with it and the associated dragon power. Torku had guarded his portal for thousands of years, through the great freezes and the floods that followed. For a while there, with him, there had been other dragon dogs, his family, for many lifetimes. But the memories of those times have been lost. He was used to being alone. Yet he'd never ever felt as alone as that night when the mountain shook and the sky raged. Lightning struck the tallest of the poplars nearest to the portal, and it closed without warning, disappeared as if it had never been. Torku trembled and howled before collapsing in shock. When he woke and there was still no portal, he knew his life was over, and he lay down and waited to die. Only he didn't die. Some monks from the nearby monastery saw what happened, and they came and dragged Torku back to their temple, where they tortured him and forced him into servitude, as they did with all the other beings of the land of the wild yaks. This memory returned to Torku in December 2020, when we had a fire in the barn and the petrol mower exploded. Thereafter, he was frightened of loud noises, fireworks, thunderstorms and heavy rain, and he'd always been very calm previously. It's taken us until recently to understand what was going on with him, partly because he didn't know himself and couldn't explain even if he did, and then there is the issue of cosmic timing. We have no precedent for what is unfolding now. The earth, nature, and all living beings are becoming self-aware according to their specific physical expression and their soul guidance. For mammals and birds, this means that their souls are reintegrating with their physical bodies. We have been told that animals do not have an individual soul, that they have instead something called a group soul or an oversoul. I disagree with this. I find that many animals have souls, maybe not all of them, but certainly those who have chosen to live alongside us. I wasn't actually capable of perceiving them myself until 20 years ago, although it really was something I'd always known in my own terms as a child. Trauma, religious dogma and lifehood experience have cut so many of us off from our own souls. Is it such a stretch to consider that this could happen to other beings in animal bodies too? And what is a soul? From my perspective, it is the thread of our lives, a cord of light that we weave into the great tapestry of life. It is our storyline. I have known several animals with previous life experience and their unique stories, and These have been confirmed by otherwise unknowable facts from third parties. The word animal itself is a curse on these beings, and it stores their ensoulment every time we use it, and they feel it. The word is derived from the Latin anima, meaning soul, and mal, meaning evil. From now on, I'm calling them by their species name, dog or cat, etc. And also a made-up word, like anibons or anibo, which would mean the good and beautiful souls that they are. Since it opened in early August, Tulku has laid in the portal for long periods. Initially I sat with him, but by early September he'd made it clear that he wanted me outside the portal to transcribe what came through him while he was in it. Then as we approached the full moon, he began to get edgy. He didn't want either of us in the portal. This full moon, here in the early morning of the 18th of September, was also a partial eclipse. From our location, it occurred with the moon conjunct Saturn in the flow of the water bearer. I see Saturn as an indicator of something being unwound, extracted like a cork from a bottle. It feels uncomfortable, distressing even, and it's difficult to observe something to which we have an emotional attachment leaving. But I had no idea how deep this would go. On the afternoon of the 16th of September, when Dean got back from town, Tulku suddenly became very weak and listless. He wasn't in pain, but he was hobbling around stiff-legged and seemed very confused, as if he wasn't quite sure where he was. I knew that Dean hadn't brought any negative energy back with him, as has sometimes happened in the past, as he's now moved into his catalysing function. That, and knowing that the Saturn moon eclipse was imminent, helped me see that what looked increasingly bad was in reality good and necessary. Because after that, Tulku went into a rapid decline. By the 17th, he could barely walk. His hind legs gave out, but he wouldn't or couldn't lay down and rest. And as darkness fell, he began a relentless pacing from room to room, dragging his feet and drooling, unreachable as a zombie dog. A knockout dose of marijuana tincture just couldn't reach him. He shuffled from room to room, door to door, but just couldn't find himself anywhere. He was lost. Yet some part of him implored me for help, pawing at the chair, the door, the bed, the wall, me. He was collapsing from exhaustion, just dragging himself up to pace and paw, silently begging with his eyes. I just didn't know what to do to help him. Nothing worked. In the wee hours, I called for help from my greater self, Dean's greater self, the dragon dogs, the dragon vortex, and then I heard a cat throwing up in the living room. I rushed out before Tulku could drag cat puke all over the house, but there was no vomit. Only Nunki sitting up licking his paws with Maya snoozing alongside. Help from the Galactic Centre, incoming. Back in the bedroom, I looked at Tulku in the moonlight and saw something else behind him, over him. Something demonic. In that moment, I knew that the problem was already in resolution, and I felt the quickening within myself. All I had to do was follow the steps before me to get there. I addressed Tulku's greater self. Show me. Something unexpected happened. A narrow tunnel with a tiny circular portal at the end, dimly lit, opened. It was in the mind space, but I could see it in the room, and when I looked down the tunnel and through the portal, the room changed, as if I was going into another space. I saw Tulku clearly in silhouette, and along his back was a carapace of gold wires, each wire stuck into his spine and twisted up into a jagged serpentine crest. I immediately cut the wires and pulled them out of his back and crumpled the crest and sent it through the eclipse portal. I told him, "It is not your master." but he had already left the room and went to lie down. I couldn't sleep, and I lay there thinking about this thing. It was a crude structure, and certainly no demon. Gradually, it dawned on me that the structure I saw was the imprint in his mind field, in his memory, of a spiked jacket he had been tortured with so long ago. This horrific revelation kept me awake for a few hours more, and then Tulku got up and began the pacing again. More marijuana tincture, and still he plodded on, just totally spent. Was he looking for something? Was there something in the house disturbing him? I'd done such a thorough clearing earlier this year that I couldn't imagine what it might be. Then suddenly I knew, with absolute clarity, the Buddhist prayer flags from the Himalayas that a friend had given me. I had deactivated them, but that must have failed. In the instant that the thought came to my mind, Tulku collapsed, moaning and distraught. I rushed to get the flags and told Dean to burn them immediately, which he did. As soon as they were burned, Tulku went to lie down in the portal. What was written on those flags? We had no idea. But no doubt it was harmful to Tulku and most likely to the other nature spirits too. We really thought we'd found the cause of the disturbance and he could relax, but no. A couple of hours later, he was up and pacing again, this time going repeatedly to the place where I had a small Ganesha statue and also to the corner of the house closest to where there was a Buddha statue outside in the garden. These were also gifts, and I had also deactivated both of them some time ago, but clearly that had failed too. Dean took the statues and buried them in the woods, and Tulku slept for the rest of the day. I want to pause a moment in this story to comment on what's going on with these statues. I don't find this easy to talk about. It makes me feel nauseous, physically sick. The fact of it is that all, and I mean all, with no exceptions, all religious iconography is a form of spiritual technology that interferes with the flow of information between our physical bodies, our biofield, and our souls. This technology prevents us from integrating past life experience and from being the best version of ourselves we can be, and it has nothing to do with belief. Belief is what causes us to make choices about whether we actually want to look into something or not. It doesn't matter whether you believe me or not in what I'm saying here. What matters is whether you choose to act or not. If you have any of these artifacts in your home, and a dog, and a neutral pendulum, you can easily check whether they have a positive or a negative effect on him or her. There are probably other ways to check too. You could just bring it closer to them and see how they react. It doesn't work with cats, but it might work with birds. Ensoulment in dogs. This is the embodiment of the infinite light of the mind woven into the eternal thread of life. As they go through it, it looks like sickness. It's not pretty. It's frightening. Their hindquarters give way as they become aware of the curse of bestiality and sexual exploitation. Generations of forced breeding programs and cruelty that have been put upon them. Their senses will be impaired while they integrate all of this from their own lifehood experience. They won't want to eat and they can become incontinent for a while. Some of the symptoms would be diagnosed by a vet as wobbler syndrome, cruciate ligament displacement, hip dysplasia or dementia. I see it as their own light, rearranging their bodies at a cellular level and pushing out what is not in alignment with their true selves. You make your own choice on how you see it, what you choose to do or not do, and you will live with the consequences of your choices. There are also the night terrors. Tulku is still unable to walk, and I'm sleeping on the floor with him at night because he's suffering from nightmares that wake him up crying, shaking and salivating. I don't know the specific content of his nightmares, but I recognise the feeling as I had them right through until my mid-20s. Previous life memories are triggered by the awareness that the energies behind the trauma are still here today. Last night, September the 20th, he woke me up terrified and managed to convey that he was frightened of being taken away. He couldn't settle until I put a lead on him and held it. That gave him a sense of security. But half an hour later, he started whining and shaking again, and I couldn't console him or calm him. Unexpectedly, in that moment, Izzy went into the portal. I've never seen her there before. She is an excellent telepath, although she doesn't do small talk. Her message was crystal clear. You must be awake at this time, or the harmful energies will drain your life force. The danger window was 4:30 to 5:30 a.m. Merlin was in on it too, crowing throughout that time, and then stopping before starting up again at his usual 7 a.m. There is a level of communication going on here between the animals and the Earth Mother that I'm only just getting attuned to. At this time, I don't have any more information on the harmful energies. Anyway, none of this is as bleak as it might initially sound. We, Tulku, Dean and I, and the other dragon dogs who have been through this or are going through it now, want to share this information with you so you can make a more informed choice. And if you think this is crazy talk or that I'm aggrandizing, romanticizing, or even projecting my own agenda onto innocent animals, that's okay. This is just not part of your story and you might want to focus your attention elsewhere. If you have a companion dog, go ahead and ask him or her about their past lives. They might surprise you, and you might even surprise yourself. Exhort them. There is wonder and magic to be discovered. On another of our night vigils with Tulku, we became aware of his essence. This ancient being, a nature power, his wisdom and love that was all-encompassing, immense, gentle, transformative, of unfathomable depth and resilience. A wild and free elemental being that we are honoured to care for as he rebirths himself on a pile of cushions in the living room. Original humans have lived on Earth for much, much longer than we have been told. We have survived many cataclysms, most of which were caused by exploitation, terraforming, and wars between visitors from other worlds. They got marooned here when the portal was closed. We are now completing the cycle that began with the last ice age, 100,000 years of survival in caves and underground cities, does things to people. And it takes a while to recover. The allegory of Plato's cave is a true story, but it misses out all the good bits, like that we learn to shapeshift while living in the womb of the Great Mother. Tulku says that he likes his dog's body and that he's not ready to pass on his lineage yet. He has more of this story to tell. Thank you for listening.